everything that is thinkable is possible.
Hello, Esmael Gillis here with the newest episode of the Inspirational Leadership Series with Harley Lovegrove on Esmael's World, my podcast. I'm happy to be here with all of you today. I feel for so many different reasons that our current political system seems hardwired to exacerbate problems instead of solving them, whether it is managing the pandemic, civil rights, the polarization politically to the far right or the far left. It can leave you feeling discouraged and uncertain, as we slowly realize the economic reality we are facing and all the challenges with it. I feel more than ever we are in need for inspirational leadership. And today I sit here with Harley Lovegrove, the author of Making a Difference, Transition, and Inspirational Leadership to guide us. In this episode, Harley Lovegrove and I discuss a deeper understanding of what it is to be a leader and an inspiration to others. We will go through the book Inspirational Leadership, the five essential elements Harley wrote, and discuss in depth what exactly those five elements are and how to implement them in daily business. So if you want to attract the best stylists available on the market, keep your key stylists in your team and guide your stylists to become the best versions of themselves and understand where inspiring leaders get their vision from and how to find it in the chaos of life, tune in now. Hello, Harley.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi, Esmael. Thank you. Thank you.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Doing pretty well. You know how it is. It's difficult days, but actually, it's going pretty good. It's I've adapted. I'm in the flow now. And
okay, perfect. So happy to have you here on the show today. And my first set of questions is a little bit about your background and experience in the field of inspirational leadership. So the hair salon owners in our audience can understand who you are, where you're coming from, and how you can relate to where they are right now. And then we'll jump into those specific mistakes when it comes to inspirational leadership, so our audience can understand how to avoid the trouble that stops so many people.
Okay.
So could you tell us a little bit about yourself in terms of background, Harley, your education,
sure.
Experience?
I was brought up in Southeast London in the UK. My mother was an artist. My father was an architect. So I had a very, should we say, artistic background, very visual background, with a lot of modern art in the house. We had a big house in townhouse, and in the cellar we had a pottery and with ceramics. And then in the front room on the first floor, there was a big art studio. So there was always painters coming in and out. So I had a very visual background, should we say, and in also a very musical background. Although my parents weren't musicians themselves, I was fascinated by music. So I've always had throughout my life this mixture of visual arts and music. So that's kind of my upbringing. And many years later, I'd started wanting to be a musician when I was a teenager, but I didn't really have enough discipline to put in the effort and the self-belief. I was easily put off by negative criticism. I found that very difficult at that age. And I kind of drifted into business I remember looking for a job at one point when I was sort of my musical career wasn't really moving. Punk had come in and everything I was doing was not punk at that stage. And I kind of drifted into recruitment, into recruiting people. And that's very interesting because you have every kind of person in front of you in your office, from secretaries to business managers. I even had a sommelier coming in who was looking for a job in a hotel. I managed to find him one in the new hotel next to the Savoy in London. So that gave me a very eclectic background. And then one day I saw this amazing job for marketing and traveling and all this and working in marketing. And I thought, oh, this would be great for me. And I kind of drifted into marketing. But very soon after that, got into the idea of my own business. So I had actually set up my first company at the age of 21. And that was in the hi-fi business. And that was happening alongside my day job, if you like. But by the time I was, I think, 23, I actually had then 24 gone completely self-employed, set up my own marketing agency, which was very, again, visual because I was doing a lot of photography at that stage, architectural photography and running a business. So that's kind of how I drifted into business. And then I met my wife, Hiritz. She's a vet. You know her. In fact, it's one of your clients.
Correct.
That's how we came
to get to know each other.
And she's Flemish, and she was working in England. And we met, we fell in love. And the next thing I know, I'm living in Belgium, and I'm running I'm doing the daily management of a software company, a very high-tech software company. So everything I'd learned in the UK, setting up those businesses, we had a hard time in the UK with a recession in the 80s and difficult times back in the 90s. So I'd learned a lot about business and marketing, HR, recruitment, finance, management, all those things. And if you like, the kind of mistakes that I made, I had learned them. So by the time I came to Belgium, I had a rich encyclopedia of experience from finance to marketing to sales, right the way through to business and motivational management. And that naturally led me into becoming the COO of a software company, which grew very, very fast.
Yeah.
And after 3 years, we had opened offices all over the world. And then it got sold to an American multinational. And then I got a reputation for stepping into businesses and helping them achieve their goals and their dreams. So that's basically it in a nutshell. And today I run the Biop Partnership, which is a group practice of interim managers, project managers, and change managers, very similar to my own background. And that's what we're doing. There's about 30 of us here in Belgium and in the UK. We also have a division in the UK as well. So that's kind of where I am today and what I do.
Yeah, it's fascinating. What I can see is you still keep the creative sides bounded with the business sides.
Oh, absolutely.
Correct.
Because that's really in the depth. And we'll get to that in the last attribute. But yeah, no, I think you really need to inspire people and you have to do that. For me, that's a really important thing. Literature, art, stories. Everybody likes to hear a story.
Of course. Yeah. So we could start right off in talking about the book you wrote, Inspirational Leadership.
Yeah.
And I think like more than ever today, it's relevant and we need it.
Oh, thank you.
We need it very badly.
Yeah.
It's a personal opinion, of course. But
yeah, absolutely.
And I would like to suggest I'm going to read excerpts from the book you wrote, and then we can dive
absolutely
right in.
And yeah, indeed. And I must say that, you know, when I wrote that book, I think it was in 2010, I don't think I could have imagined the situation
of
that we're in today.
Not.
But luckily, the style of the way I wrote it, it is timeless. There are no referrals in there to specific moments in time. So it's a bit ironic that everything's turned around, actually.
Yeah.
I'd like to say I had already foreseen it, but...
no, of course.
No, that's not true.
But it's still relevant more than ever. So...
Yeah.
I'm going to read what you wrote in the book, and we're going to start right off with, I am not a qualified psychologist, nor have I conducted a worldwide scientifically objective study on the subject of inspirational leadership. However, no matter how I look at it or what labels I try to apply, I find myself coming back to the same five key elements each time I try to categorize what it is that a leader has that differentiates him or her as inspirational. And although every inspirational leader will have a whole variety of skill sets and personal characteristics, I have clearly detected common elements in every inspirational leader that I have ever come across, worked for, read about, or known. To verify my findings, I've taken time out to read several management books on the subject, to examine modern-day research, and to look back at the key findings of the thought leaders from the past four centuries. What I have discovered is that it is too simplistic to consider leadership characteristics in isolation, and that to do like me books are often not very helpful, because one important fact: the very best leaders all lead in their own different way. In addition, because the environment in which they learn their craft and find themselves operating in differs so widely, they each have their own unique style and personalities that, in part, define who they are. What is important, therefore, is to define exactly what it is that sets these people apart. To help achieve this, I categorized 5 labels, each one representing an essential element of inspirational leadership: confidence, emotional intelligence, adaptability, intellectual curiosity, and pragmatism. So, these 5 elements we're going to dive in today, in the element of confidence.
Yeah.
We're going to go in full on that one, which is...
Well, it begins with confidence. Yeah, absolutely. I mean...
And Harley, you wrote, confidence is that deep inner belief of knowing that everything you imagine is possible. It is the energy that fuels your life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I'm going to continue on that part. Confidence is the foundation element that gives inspirational leaders their sense of certainty. It is what inspires them to believe that their hypothesis or vision is a correct one, that their plans and ideas will be the most effective. However, it is not all about the self. By trusting their own judgment, confidence allows them to trust the judgment they have of others. In short, it is the element that allows them to trust and thereby form, in conjunction with their emotional intelligence, strong bonds with their colleagues and advisors. And this is essential for consistently making informed decisions and having the nerve to carry them through. Confidence has nothing to do with being extrovert or introvert. In fact, quiet people are often just as likely, if not more so, to be more confident than extroverts. Being loud and impulsive, often traits in extroverts, are surprisingly not qualities that sit comfortably with inspirational leaders who need to consistently perform at their very best day in, day out. So, Harley, what's the mistake that could cost like more hair salon owners a lot of time and wasted effort in lacking confidence? Because when we see here, it's such an important topic, but it's not an easy one.
No, I think, you know, one really needs to go back to the core, because you imagine you're making life choices at whatever age that is, and it is to become a salon owner, for example. So that means at that point, you've already got this vision of a salon and people working for you and with you and clients and customers and suppliers. You have all this sort of vision. This is your world. It's going to be your domain. You're going to be on that stage and it's going to be yours. No one's going to tell you what color the walls are going to be or what color the ceiling's going to be. So that does imply already a certain level of confidence. But the problem is, if you believe in everything you do, everything you say, everything you think, and you want things always exactly the way that you want them, you're going to alienate others. And the secret of inspirational leadership is allowing other people to come onto your stage and perform and shine and act on that stage. And even if they're juniors, less experienced than you are, by trusting them, by knowing that even if they cut the wrong piece of hair or they do something wrong, we can fix this, we can do it, we can make it happen. By giving them that sense of security, basically will allow them to shine. Because we cannot shine unless we are given a surroundings. We see it a lot more with young people today, where they are brought up in an environment where they are the center, where their parents say, yes, sing and perform, and they do all these wonderful things and they have all these hobbies. Yeah. But the point is, you've got to, in your salon, make space for others. And that means that the confidence you have is about delegation. It's about trusting others. And if you are not confident enough, you need to obviously make sure you have good people around you, like your bookkeepers, your lawyers, your advisors. My father always said, you know, you need in life, you need a real estate agent, you need a good solicitor, and you need a priest. You know, I mean, but maybe we don't need the priest today. But, you know, there is a certain element of this, and confident people are not afraid to ask for advice and have a second opinion.
Of course. Yeah.
And that's really where my element is. So be sure that you're not just saying and doing things because that's what your father would say, or your mother would say, or your brother who's better in business than you are, and you just do what you think they say. You've got to find yourself, and you've got to, the word is called authenticity these days, but you've got to be true to yourself, and then let others shine. I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, we can go true to authenticity, but before we do, I'm going to read also an excerpt. But where does this confidence come from?
Mm-hmm.
According to research carried out by Corina U. Griffin and Professor Robin Plumin of the Institute of Psychiatry, King's College, London, there is evidence to suggest that self-perceived ability is genetically influenced. Although the scientific community seems to differ widely on this subject, one thing seems to be clear. True confidence is acquired over a period of time. For every action we take that delivers a positive result, our confidence grows. For every action we take that ends in disaster, it temporarily deflates. But here lies the crucial build motivator. If we are surrounded by good life coaches, we are taught that learning from our mistakes helps us avoid them in the future, and thereby, even in failure, we can see a net growth in our confidence level once the emotions have passed.
Yeah, indeed.
So what's a specific challenge that could hold most salon owners back regarding the acceptance of fear and failure to grow confidence? Because it's a process.
Yes, it is. Of course, if you're brought up with your parents being genetically people who really do believe in themselves and their own capability within reason. I mean, I don't mean idiots. I mean, no. Oh, I can, look yeah. at me, I can fly. No. I mean, no. This is not yeah. what we're talking about no. here. But, you know, my mother genuinely said, Harley, whatever you see is thinkable is possible. And I was sort of brought up with that, and I was challenging that. So that is your basis, really. But if you make a mistake and you've got people around you who support you, who want to help you, who understand you, they say, come on, don't worry. You know, there's always tomorrow. It's not that bad. We can sort it. Yeah, but I've just lost 150 pounds or whatever it is, or that, and that. And I should have done this. Yeah, we did. Well, what did we learn from that situation? How do we get through it? And this constant learning that actually when things go wrong, they're either fixable, and if they're not fixable, we say sorry and we learn, because those mistakes we made are actually the best investments we ever have. Now, it's much better to have other people make mistakes and learn from their mistakes from a distance. But often when we're young, we know it all. I knew much more than my father about business when I started in business, because I thought I did. But of course, I didn't. But we have that, the arrogance of youth, of course. But the sooner we can learn, and when you see really successful leaders, the one thing you notice from a very young age, the moment they left university or college or whatever, that they will go to older people and they will ask them questions. You know, what were the big mistakes that you made in your career? What would you not do again if you had a time? They're not asking you, how do I do this and how do I get there? They tend to be asking you about, is there anything I should be looking out for? And they're listening and they're absorbing that information. So, yeah, if you're lucky enough to have a trusting group of people around you who can help you and support you, that's brilliant, especially if there's people who've been through it before. Because whatever you face in life, someone's been there before you.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, you that's know. Correct, because that's how life works.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I there's a great line by Bob Dylan where he wrote in one of his songs, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Yep. And I look back when I was 18, I knew everything. No one could tell me anything. And that's why actually my success in business didn't start to really happen in real terms until I was in my early 40s. Because although I had some momentary successes in the UK in my early 30s, I was driving a nice Jaguar and everything was going pretty well. When the recession came, which wasn't my fault, I wasn't prepared for it. I hadn't foreseen that this could happen. I thought this heyday of Margaret Thatcher would last forever.
Forever, yeah.
And those are the things that you learn from, you know, from the old Bible stories of 7 years of famine and 7 years of growth and seven. We see this as everything is cyclical.
Yes. Yes.
And those kind of lessons one has to learn.
Yeah.
Step by step gives you the confidence that you need, because you feel, no, whatever happens, we can face this. And that's what the leaders have to do.
When it's a process. So when you build slowly, piece by piece, you still have those elements like your background, your character, the little voice in your head. So, and now we're going to go right to the next chapter.
I mentioned also about mentors.
Yes, mentors.
And I'm coming back to them again. You know, if you're starting out in your salon and you're new, find one maybe in another town or somewhere else, or have a mentor, that person who taught you at college or something. Keep in touch with them just to get, you know, a feedback, or when you've got an idea, run it by them, because your family and friends are always going to say, oh, yeah, that sounds great. It's going to be fantastic. Yeah. But they don't know. So
you
need
realistic.
To find that mirror that will push you back. Even if they're not in exactly the same business, I don't see that it always has to be identical. Sometimes you can learn a lot from people who are accountants, for example, who have customers who are coming in and with expectations or whatever. You can learn a lot from all sorts of people.
Yeah. For myself, personally, I learned the most from people who are not in the same industry.
Yeah.
At the end.
Well, business.
About business.
Yeah, yeah.
About business. Not about the trade, but about business.
Yeah, exactly. So don't ask me to tell you how to do your job, because I can't help you there. But I can look at your books and see where we are financially.
Yes, and that's another very important topic.
Yeah.
And it's not easy to find that in our industry, because it's not really well developed and taught yet. So you have to go out for yourself and find those people.
Yeah, you do. And that's very, very important. Yeah.
On the other hand, is it also not dangerous if you want to be too careful? And then we're going to go back to the next excerpt of your book.
Yeah, you can be. You could definitely be too careful, and that's for sure. But I'll let you read the section, then we can go on from there.
So you're right. Are you playing it too safe?
Yeah.
So when the cycle of routine becomes the norm, it's time to stretch yourself beyond the boundaries of the expectancy of others. Anyone who is earning an attractive salary, working in a comfortable position, without risk or sense of challenge, knows the feeling of dull acceptance. The weighing up of the sure knowledge of a regular income against the uncertainty of something different is, for many, far too compelling.
Mm-hmm.
If a leader's life and career is to mean anything, then they need to shine and to breed creativity into their working environment. And this is done by daring to challenge the environment in which they find themselves, to imagine something different, something new, something worth achieving. This means daring to take risks by taking on assignments that have not been tackled before, to enter into a world where one needs to persuade others that the crazy idea you have makes sense, not just for you, but for the business at large.
Yeah.
So, you said it all already.
Yeah,
you said
okay,
it all already.
Yeah.
But so, could you then elaborate a little bit more about how exactly we can encourage not to playing it safe?
Yeah. Okay. And I think, you know, for some leaders, this is not an issue. There's some leaders, and I, goodness knows, I've worked with a few, who give them a long haul flight or a holiday of a couple of weeks, and they come back with so many ideas, it's crazy, it's just not manageable, and they can actually destroy a business because it's just gone too far the other way.
Yeah.
I'm personally one of these people who's a little bit likes to play things safe, and I don't like to go and take out about a big bank loan without really feeling. I'm much more on the safety side than on the other side. And so I think in order to keep your salon fresh and to keep your business fresh, you need to go out of your own comfort zone. But that doesn't mean you need to suddenly go into making cakes or a different kind of service. No, what it means is consider the things that you like. So you go home at the end of the evening, you look around, you look at your CD collection or your music collection, you watch your favorite five movies, which books you've read, where you go for your holiday. And then you say to yourself, okay, now this week, every week, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to look at it from a different point of view. I want to meet people who work in different businesses from myself, accountants, lawyers, maybe people who run a car garage, different people. And you need to make a deliberate attempt to at least learn about them. And if you haven't got access because you're too tired, then read some autobiographies of people who have done these, been successful business people, because they will inspire you and you will learn things from people who are not directly, as you were saying, connected with your business. So you don't feel challenged by them, but you'll get new ideas. You know, I mean, you think about that painting you put on the wall. You got it just because you inherited it from your mum and you liked it at home. But maybe you should just try swapping them around or go to an art gallery and see some other art. Challenge yourself, because in those emotional challenges and seeing those challenges, or sport, for example, is another thing, you know, to go out running, and when you get the endorphins flowing, these different challenges that we have will inspire you to put more energy and more effort and more ideas in your business as well. They're completely linked. If you're playing it safe and you're watching your favorite music and you're listening to your favorite program, you're doing the same thing and you go on the same place on holiday every year, maybe your business becomes the same, and your employees, they're looking for something a little bit different and new stories. And if you haven't got a new story to tell, you know, the old comedians used to come onto the stage, I remember in the sort of 60s, and you say, you know, a funny thing happened to me on the way to the theater. Yeah. And in that opening, a funny thing happened to me coming to the salon this morning. You'll never guess what happened. Everybody's listening and they're waiting to see what happens. So this creativity, this ability to tell stories can only happen if you yourself are exposing yourself to new ideas, new things, and especially things you don't like. So when someone says to you, oh, I love drum and bass music for something, you go, oh, no, I don't like it. Then just say, look, I tell you what, give me the name of two of your favorite albums. Tell me what they are. And then force yourself to listen for just 5 minutes in the car or something over a few days, just for 5 minutes each day. And then maybe after a while, you'll get at least a sense of something that you didn't have before. And that might make you think about cutting hair in a different way or bringing in a different kind of stylist. Because if you don't do that, when you recruit your people, you're going to be looking for people who are like you. And maybe your customers want variety and they see one person doing something a bit funky in the corner. They think, oh, I wouldn't mind that next time. And that helps, inspires each other. I'm sure there must be competition in your salon between the stylists with ideas and things.
It's more we have, like, if I can say, like a culture, it's not, maybe it's like healthy competition. We work as a team, but we try to be ourselves in that sense, that everyone has his stronger and weaker points.
Yeah.
And in a team, we try to bring them together.
Because your customers are not all the same, are they?
Of course,
They're not all exactly like my wife coming in wanting whatever it is.
No. So if there's a promise you make as a business, as a salon or a company, it's also the promise you have to keep.
Because I can imagine you have more than one kind of customer. So I can imagine you might have a customer who always wants the same thing every 3 months or whatever the period is. And others who are always looking for something new, something different with a new outfit. They're going to go to somewhere different and they want something new. And that's going to be challenging for you as well. And if you're not getting inspired by reading books and studying and looking, and I can imagine it can be.
Yeah, and that's the point also for me. For me, for example, it's very much need to go outside of my hairdressing industry, because when I go out, I get a little bit more inspired, because it's not like repetition. The thing is, when you're so long in business, it sometimes it's like you get the feeling, I've seen it already.
Yeah.
Come together, and that's a dangerous point.
And then find yourself saying things like this when someone like me is coming in to have a look at your business or whatever, and then you'll be saying things like, well, you know, that wouldn't work in our business because we are different. Well, what is very useful is when I'm talking to someone in the petrochemical industry, I say, well, you know, my friend who's in the clothing industry, they have exactly the same problems that you're describing. I say, but instead of them shifting the products on trucks, they're moving it this way. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because they don't feel threatened by this. It's not me criticizing the way they're running their business. It's me explaining how it's done in another kind of business, in another industry.
Yeah. And it opens up.
That's exactly what inspiring people have to do, is to open up people around them and allow them to feel confident to express their opinions, have ideas, and dare to do things that maybe they haven't exactly done before.
Yeah, but That's the whole point at the end. It's when, for example, when you stay in our industry, the most, it's very funny, because when you move around, you also meet the same people everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you always see
within your business,
within the industry,
you always
see the same people everywhere,
because
some people are also eager to learn and to do some research. So, but it's the same pond you're swimming in. You
absolutely,
know?
Absolutely. No.
When you have the courage to step out of it, then it gets interesting, because you can see like the mechanical side of producing your haircuts and working and keeping your standard and still being creative, and also being commercially livable, because it's not enough to be the creative artist.
No, indeed.
And at the end of the day, if you can't pay your bread.
But I think what would be really interesting would be to go on a road trip to see how stylists work in the poorest parts of in South America, for example, and how it is in California, and how it might be in Finland or Norway with the rich and the poor, and seeing how people make do with just a pair of scissors and, you know, I don't know what.
Yeah.
Because I think that would also be very inspiring, not just to go to the events that are just sponsored by the usual suppliers.
Because the underlying
story is always there.
Yeah.
I know it's...
That's a very, very interesting idea already.
Well,
yeah, because
I don't know whether I was sent to China to try and solve a very complex problem that one of our clients had.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem they had was trying to move a lot of data to another building, and there was no way of cable or anything there, and they couldn't do it with Wi-Fi. And it was 15 years ago now. And there was just no way they could do this. And I was sent out there to see what I could do, how we could solve the problem. And they were probably expecting me to come up with a political solution to get the government to dig up the roads and put in the cable they needed, which the IT people wanted. And I was sitting there in this office, and I saw somebody cycling past on a bicycle. And I said to the guys, well, how much data are we talking about? And it was like half a terabyte, which was a lot of data. And it was like a day or whatever. And I thought, well, you can get an external drive and you could upload it onto a drive. Yeah. And I said, well, you could then just get someone to cycle to the town with this drive twice a day and upload it. And it was such a stupid solution. But, okay, they didn't use a bicycle. They probably used a car or a motorbike. Yeah. But actually, that's what they did for 6 months. It just twice a day uploaded the data. Okay. And then, of course, 6 months later, the problem was solved because other people wanted the solution. Okay. But all I'm saying is that sometimes you've got to get out in order to get these creative. Poor countries often have incredibly innovative ways of doing what we spend a lot of money doing.
Because they have to.
They haven't got another choice. Yeah, and they see in the magazines an effect or something, and they haven't got the infrastructure, but they'll find a way. Absolutely, they'll find a way.
So, dear listeners, we came to an end for this incredible, enlightening episode with Harley Lovegrove. Stay tuned for our next episode. Thank you, Harley, for sharing these insights with us.